Welcome to the Philip Wiley Show. Take a look behind the curtain of professional hacking and hear compelling discussions with guests from diverse backgrounds who share a common curiosity and passion for challenges and their job. And now, here's your host, offensive security professional, educator, mentor, and author, Philip Wiley.
Hello, welcome to another episode of the Philip Wiley Show. I'm excited to have my friend Matt Johansson, aka Matt J, a fellow cybersecurity professional and content creator, on the show today. We got to meet for the first time during Black Hat DEF CON last year, but kind of followed him from a Discord group that we're a member of that, you know, it was basically caters towards content creation and cybersecurity. And one of the things I'm really excited and really think about when scheduling Matt to be on is I've had some conversations with Daniel Meisler, had one with Naham Sek, Daniel Meisler, and Jason Haddix on my old podcast. And I really like sharing the, you know, about content creation because it's such a great opportunity for people trying to break into cybersecurity. Not necessarily everyone's going to be a John Hammond or a Daniel Meisler and, you know, having a lucrative business out of it, but just the opportunity that it presents. So thanks for joining today, Matt.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's wild. You said the first time we met was in Vegas. I was like, that can't be right because we've talked to each other online for so many years, but Twitter and stuff. But yeah, that's true. We just finally ran into each other at Black Hat this past year.
That's the interesting thing about the community, you know, online and stuff. You can talk to people for years and, you know, when you meet them in person, it just, yeah, it seems like you've known each other for forever. So.
Yep. So well, glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, great to have you on. I really like the stuff you're doing with your content. And one of the things I was just sharing with someone the other day, I've enjoyed talking to people recently, you know, about personal branding and content creation because, you know, cybersecurity, while it's still a passion, I enjoy it. It's good to get to geek out over some content creation and branding with other folks.
Agreed. I like to geek out about both. I see those questions go around every now and then. The like, what could you talk about for 30 minutes unprepared, like at the drop of a hat? And it's like, yeah, but I think both of those topics, I'd have no problem.
Yeah. So before we get too deep into this, I like would if you would share your hacker origin story, basically how you got started and where you are today.
Sure. So yeah, I was always a computer nerd, even from like middle school age. Me and some kids on my block. It was the 90s, so you hung out with kids on your street at the time. I drive around now, I don't see anyone outside on the street, but we got really into like modding some of those early video game systems, so like and you know, pirating computer games and things like that back in like the AOL days and LAN parties and things like that, kicking people off of AOL with punters. I don't know if you remember that. That was kind of like my first brush with hackerdom was punters off of AOL and soldering mod chips to the bottom of an original PlayStation or figuring out all this stuff of how we could do stuff. And then, yeah, I got to, you know, later in school and I actually convinced my high school to let me take computer programming all 4 years, even though they only offered it for half a year. For the like the official class was only half a year. I took that right away freshman year, and then I talked my guidance counselor into letting me do independent study for the whole time I was in school. So I was just a resident of the computer lab, learning, you know, whatever language the teachers would give me a book on. And then yeah, I went to school for computer science, even though I don't use a whole lot of that in my day-to-day life, it was kind of a natural progression. But the best thing to come out of that was my senior year in university, my school hired a CISO for the first time. And the CISO happened to have his PhD. And so he became an adjunct professor there, even though he was the information security officer. He also decided to teach a senior seminar my absolute last semester at college. He was the first time that they taught a seminar on cybersecurity. And he's a SANS instructor. So it was basically, I got to take a SANS class at university. This is well before anyone even had a cybersecurity degree program. No colleges had cybersecurity degrees at the time. And so really fortunate timing there. The other, besides just like learning how to like write buffer overflows and Nmap and Metasploit. Well, Metasploit was brand new. I don't even think we were using Metasploit at school, but definitely had like a semester long CFP basically, and he taught us how to do all sorts of stuff, which was really, really cool. Besides that being really valuable, the other most valuable thing he did was hand me a DVD. So again, I'm dating myself. I don't think you can hand anyone a DVD now. Handed me a DVD of a talk at the Last Hope. It was a conference in New York City that doesn't exist anymore. James Arlen, goes by Mercurial on Twitter, gave a talk at the Last Hope called Black Hat to Black Suit. And it was basically career advice of like how to turn hacker skills into a career. Because he was kind of a hacker guy that turned into a CISO of like a giant power company up in Canada. I might be mixing my Canadians up. If you're listening, sorry if I mixed two Canadians up, but he's had a very lucrative career. And that was what the talk was. And the other thing that my professor had me do was join a very early version of LinkedIn and Twitter. They were less than a year old. Twitter was less than a year old. I forget when LinkedIn started, but it was also early. And at the same time, I got to then join Twitter and introduce myself to James Arlen and a few of these other characters that you all know. I got laid off and graduated college in the same 2-week period. It was weird economic times. And the first security conference after I graduated university was ShmooCon, like 4. I didn't have two pennies to rub together at the time. Broke college kid who just lost his job, moved home with mom, was miserable about it. And on Twitter, I have a fondness for Twitter in my heart. I reached out to a bunch of the hacker crew in Boston who was going down to ShmooCon, led by a friend of ours, I'm sure you know, Jack Daniel, founder of Security B-Sides and a number of other things in the community. But along with Jack was also Zach Lanier, who founded the Security Twits, which was like a security Twitter group at the time. Chris Hoff goes by Beaker, and a number of other people. And they were renting an RV from Boston and driving down to DC together for ShmooCon. They called it the Shmoo Bus. And I reached out to these guys and said, hey, I found a ShmooCon ticket. I found a couch to crash on with a friend who lives in DC. I could really use a ride down there. If I can get to I-95, like, will you pull over and bring me to DC? I was living on Long Island at the time in New York. I took a train. They said, yes, I took a train from Long Island to Hoboken, New Jersey, popped up on the side of the road in I-95. I got picked up in an RV by Jack Daniel and a few other hackers and brought to my first hacker conference as a young pup trying to get into the industry. So and there I got to meet a whole bunch of people, including people that wound up hiring me in my first few jobs and even later jobs. One of my more recent jobs was actually at Bank of America, where Chris Hoff, who was in that freaking RV, hired me much later in my career. So I've kept relationships with a lot of these people from back in the day of just putting myself on Twitter and getting myself to these conferences.
Yeah, that's got to be one of the best stories I've heard of anyone's first conference.
Basically hitchhiking, right?
Yeah.
Imagine moving home to mom from college and saying, hey, I'm going to go get picked up by an internet stranger named Jack Daniel and go to some hacker conference.
Yeah.
My parents luckily trusted me that I wasn't absolutely insane. So,
yeah, that and pretty much getting taken there by industry legends.
Honestly, it really helped because I had like a 4 or 5 hour drive to chat with these guys and build up some rapport, and then like walked in and at least I had something to break the ice in LobbyCon, right? I was the new guy on the block, and they'd be like, oh, are you that kid that was in the Shmoo Bus? And LobbyCon really helped, and I didn't have any money, but man, if I figured out how to buy some of these people a beer, right? And they've all remembered it. So it was hugely valuable.
Oh, very cool. So kind of what type of role are you doing these days?
So right now I'm the head of software security at Reddit. I was most recently running all of vuln management for Bank of America, so all vuln identification and remediation, which was a huge operation at B of A, owned a pretty big team. And then I came to Reddit and had no team, and I was just a principal architect at Reddit. So kind of just a more senior person on the security staff that they would throw hard problems at. And more recently, I took over the head of software security role because we just got a new CISO named Flea. I'm sure some of your listeners are aware of Flea. He was the CISO of Gusto, CISO of Square. He's pretty well known in the industry at this point. He's a great, great leader. And he said I can avoid people management any longer. I read it. So yeah, I'm leading up the software security team, which the biggest part of that is AppSec, which is where my career really was born. That, like, so some of those early jobs kind of post that ShmooCon story. My first like really big job after a few consulting pen testing gigs to help pay my student loans. My first real job was at White Hat Security, doing a lot of hands-on AppSec pen testing. And then I wound up building their threat research team in Houston. That's what brought me to Texas. So I have a long history in AppSec. I diverted a bit away from AppSec and now I'm back. So I'm leading software security at Reddit, which, like I said, the biggest function of right now is AppSec.
Very cool. It must have been a pretty good experience at White Hat too. We used to use White Hat when I worked at, I used to work for, I'm trying to think what it was, when we got acquired by MetLife. I used to work for a mortgage company. We were acquired by MetLife Bank. And so we had White Hat doing some of our stuff.
I unfortunately, or fortunately, burned into my retinas is most of our customers. At the time, it was one of those like startup life. It was one of the best jobs I ever had. Jeremiah Grossman was a great leader, the founder there. I met a lot of great people. We all keep in touch. We all have a special bond because it was a really cool time. But yes, we were doing lots and lots of hands-on AppSec pen tests when not a lot of other people on the planet at the time were doing that many as we were. If you were a consultant, you'd do a pen test for a week or two, write a report, fly to the next one, or do the next one remotely, whatever it was. And we had it to a point where, because we were a SaaS platform with a lot of human backing and kind of like a manual pen test, like upsell from the SaaS scanner. And so it was almost assembly lined at that point. We were doing a lot more pen tests. I call that my master's degree in AppSec. I didn't get a master's degree, but boy, did I go through the grinder of doing a lot of pen tests. And so I remember the MetLife website. I could probably remember a vuln I found on MetLife. We had a lot of customers that I still tell stories I was like, oh, that customer. Yeah. That's the website I used to teach the new people SQL injection on. And oh, that customer. Yeah. We found some really good business logic in that. And so that was a really good example of like how to get around like add to cart business logic stuff. I don't know. Yeah. I have a lot of stories from back in the day.
Very cool. So before we get too far into, I have a lot of listeners and viewers that are trying to get into security or trying to advance their career in security. So what advice would you have for someone who wants to get started in AppSec or application pen testing?
Yeah, in AppSec specifically, I think there's a lot more opportunities than other avenues to really do stuff as someone new to cybersecurity. That's because websites are everywhere. And a lot of them nowadays have bug bounty programs. So you can legally learn to hack on a lot of just websites out there, right? That wasn't the case, 20 years ago, right? Like 15 years ago, even. Bug bounty programs were kind of spearheaded by like the FANG, right? Like the Facebook, Google, like Apple crews. They're now pretty prolific, right? So, I mean, you mentioned Jason Haddix earlier. He runs like a really good bug hunters course. That is like specifically tuned for like, hey, how to break into bug bounty hunting. And most bug bounty stuff is AppSec related, not all. But like, especially your entry level bug bounty stuff is like, yeah, you could go to any website and try to find cross-site scripting or anything like that. OWASP is still a great resource. OWASP has like kind of sine curved in quality, in my opinion, over the years, but like as an entry level person is still a fantastic resource of free learning and content and conferences and trainings and open source projects. That's like another thing I always tell people is like, try to kick around on open source projects. Don't spam open source people with like bad contributions as someone new to the place, but if you can add value or even if you can add value, you can review pull requests in GitHub of like things, or just like learn about how an open source project is doing what it's doing is hugely valuable. Start your own side project is like another really valuable thing. If you can like, yeah, like Burp exists, but why don't you go try to learn how to build your own Burp? Right? Like just do that. Even though it exists, you're going to learn a whole lot about how that works and what is under the hood there by doing it yourself. These are all things that if you go into those early job interviews, you're gonna be able to say like, hey, yeah, I don't have the, you know, boots on the ground experience, being hired as a pen tester yet, but like, here's my bug bounty hall of fame. And here's the open source project and my pull request that got merged. And here's this tool that I built to like do recon and enumerate like variables or directory traverse or whatever it is, right? Learn the lingo, just like conference talks, reading, you know, immerse yourself in it, join these Discords and Twitter and everything that you can to learn the lingo. That'll help you learn in these courses, and that'll help you kind of put that stuff into practice in a lot of free ways. I'd say AppSec has a lot more of those opportunities than like something like if you were trying to do cloud security, it's a little bit harder. Like, okay, now you got to build your own home lab or like spend some money on an Amazon account, or it's a little bit harder. It's not impossible, right? Our friend Rich Mogul is running like a free cloud security newsletter now that he charges to teach cloud security at Black Hat. It's like thousands of dollars to take the training at Black Hat. He's doing a free version of that in his newsletter right now. It's called Cloud Slaw Security Lab of the Week. Security Lab a Week Slaw. That kind of stuff's hugely, hugely valuable, but it's still harder than AppSec for sure. Like in terms of like the pure entry level learning curve.
Yeah, very, very interesting. And one of the things too, I was just thinking about that recently because I went from AppSec into pen testing. So my first pen testing role was in 2012. And just to think about, you know, what advice to give people when they're starting out new. And I know Jason Haddock says that he thinks it's easier if you're going to go into pen testing and you really don't have the background for network or application pen testing. He thinks it's easier to start out with web app pen testing. And I kind of have to agree now too, because you think about if you're going to be an internal pen tester and you're talking about the difficulty of labs, you're going to have to set up something with Active Directory for internal. There is going to be some cloud because it's either hybrid or, you know, you're running into rarely pure on-prem environments. So all that stuff you have to set up and learn just to do, you know, infrastructure pen tests compared to web app pen testing and the availability of training, even like pure AppSec, you've got Tanya Janka, this guy, her content out there, courses, and a lot of good content, but you don't see like a ton of free content out there on like Active Directory pen testing and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense, right? Because like you said, just the pure bar to entry to like be doing a pen test that has anything to do with like a domain controller, you're not doing that for bug bounty. You're not doing that like on the weekend, right? Like you're doing that because someone paid you like to get into that engagement. So yeah, I mean, there are some courses. I'd say if you want to move away from AppSec, one of the interesting areas that I find that like, I hope more people pick up like learning about right now, is detection engineering. Is super cool. There's a lot of really cool resources out there on it. And if you like pick a type of platform, to become like an expert in writing detections on, right? Whether it's Splunk or Azure Sentinel or any of the other like SIEM products or even AWS specifically, like, you know, even just like CloudTrail type stuff. Like if you become an expert in any of this detection engineering, everyone I know needs more high quality detection and engineering talent. Like I think that's like gonna see a surge here if it isn't already. There are a number, not necessarily free content, but there's a number of good courses that I know about, specifically on like the Azure Sentinel side. Microsoft puts out a bunch of good courses, but then also just like cloud and other detection stuff, like, you know, Yara rules and this and like there's a lot of projects. It's a project rich environment that you can like kind of get in and sink your teeth into.
Yeah, very cool. It's great advice. And I like the detection engineering thing. That is a good one there. That
it's huge.
That you're not hearing a bunch of people talk about it, but it's just kind of a much needed skill set. And
there's a there's a free newsletter I'll plug. I don't have it in front of me yet, but I think it's called Detection Engineering Weekly. I can't remember who runs it either, but I read it every week. Thank you if you're listening. I read it every week. I really like it. There's some really good resources that they put out every week about, hey, I built this detection for this kind of ransomware on this kind of EDR, or hey, you know, with this rule and this combination of things, I was able to like take down this C2, and like, I don't know, just like a lot of like really interesting stuff. I wouldn't call it entry level, but like, you know, it just general career advice. This is a good skill to learn right now. It's only, people are only going to need more of this.
Yeah. Very good. So, kind of the part of the show I was really looking forward to and getting into and geeking out over is the personal branding stuff and content creation. So you have your newsletter and you do some videos for Vol and You. So if you'd like to kind of, describe that initiative.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for giving me the time to. I work really hard every week on a newsletter called Vulnerable You. It's kind of taken on a life of its own and become much more than a newsletter. It's changed my life in a lot of ways. We just sent out our 50th straight week without missing a week on that. It's the genesis of it is I've been very public about my journey with my mental health, and that topic generally is feels vulnerable to talk about that publicly. And I have some people in my life who are big fans of Brené Brown. I don't know if you're familiar with Brené Brown. She's a public speaker and author. And she has a book called The Power of Vulnerability, and she calls herself a vulnerability researcher. And she's talking all about emotional vulnerability. And I always laughed at that, like hearing that. She's like, oh, I'm a vulnerability researcher. I said, hey, me too. And it's like completely different, right? And so I've always thought about the overlap there. And so, yes, I called it Vulnerable You, the letter U, because it's like that clash of like cybersecurity vulnerability and emotional vulnerability. And then you being you, the reader, and you, university, right? Like you're vulnerable. You're going to come here and learn how to embrace that and like what that means. So the newsletter is a lot of cybersecurity news, obviously, because I just read a whole lot and write my thoughts about it. But I write a blog every week that's a part of it that is all about some of the mental health side of things, or even just like personal growth, leadership. I write kind of what I'm obsessed with that week is what I try to write about. So whatever I'm kind of like sitting on. So I did a threat modeling for depression blog that was really popular. I did like a tech professional's guide to mindfulness that got a lot of traction. I talked a lot about the loneliness epidemic is like something that is being talked about. And I think our industry is particularly sensitive to that as we're just a bunch of nerds who maybe didn't have as many friends in high school as some of our peers, not to generalize, but, and then also, we tend to be workaholics, right? Tech industry is like a work hard, industry, especially if you get into the big cities, right? You hear about like the Bay Area, New York City, like grind culture and hustle culture. That's kind of toxic in some ways, but it's, you know, popular. In our industry, and then we're a bunch of remote workers too, right? Look at this. We're not in it. You and I are both in our house right now, right? And so I think the loneliness epidemic has been like another theme that I've pulled on a little bit. And so I've tried to create a community where we can all kind of be open and vulnerable about these kinds of topics, to kind of build resilience together, both cyber resilience and like learn about stuff that we're all dealing with in that world, but also emotional resilience and even physical resilience, right? We were talking before we started recording about even the physical health stuff that a lot of us sitting at a computer all day might have to focus a little bit more on. So I think our industry has room to grow and in like our openness about these kinds of struggles, to realize that we're not alone in these struggles, right? A lot of us struggle with depression. I've had a lot of coworkers in this industry commit suicide. I've had a lot of coworkers in the industry have various mental health problems. And I'm just trying to keep that conversation going. So we all realize that we're not alone, and we kind of build a community around it and some resources around it. So that's, thank you for bringing it up. The newsletter is very much that. My video content, like you mentioned, is kind of leans more cybersecurity news right now, but I have some stuff in the works that is going to lean back hard into the mental health side.
Yeah, I think it's great what you're doing, and I really think we need to normalize mental health discussions and being vulnerable, because especially like my generation, you know, you just didn't show weakness, you did yep. not show vulnerability. And one of my favorite compliments ever speaking at a conference was I keynoted the second PancakesCon virtual conference. And, you know, the first part, you talk on something technical. Second part, it's a hobby or how to do something. And mine was on health. And so was talking about, you know, some of my challenges as a kid that with eating that, you know, based on things in my family was kind of basically conditioned to overeat. You know, you have to eat all your food before you get up from the table. Then it turned into, oh, you're not going to have seconds, that you're guilted into eating more. And it just got to where, you know, I'm eating and it tastes good and I want more of it, even though I'm full, and I got conditioned to that. So just sharing that, one of the attendees commented on how they love the vulnerability. So I just really like that is getting more accepted. And I think it's good. I really think it's great. The younger generations, that it's more normal to them and they're doing it more naturally. It's taking a little bit more to get the older generations on board. And some of that too, you've got some of the older folks like myself and even a little older that are running these companies, their management, and trying to get them on board to see that and realize that, and none of this, you know, tough, you know, man up, do it, quit whining type mentality, and take these type of issues seriously.
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. Like dead on. And I think the more that we all talk about it, the more we realize how similar a lot of our backgrounds are. Every time I talk about, like, you know, I chose to quit drinking, a year and a half ago. And whenever I talk about that and like why I chose that for my health and for various reasons, there's always someone that is either going through that right now or recently went through it. And like, there's a connection there of like, oh, I feel safe to explore that because someone else is like expressing that. And like, hey, maybe I do have an unhealthy relationship with alcohol. And like, you know, I run into it a lot. And so, you know, my goal isn't to like get to a million subscribers on any of these platforms or anything like that. I'm not trying to like do that, but like it literally every week that I write something, at least one person sends me a DM and is like, hey, I really needed to read that this week. And that just keeps me going all day. Right. I'll you know, if I can like just make one person feel like that at any given time, that's worth it. So, it's exactly what you're talking about. It's just like being vulnerable. Someone else can like see themselves in your story and what you're saying and kind of feel safe to be like, oh, all right, I'm not the only one feeling that. I'm not crazy. Right. So, yeah, that's the mission.
Yeah. It's definitely good to be able to share those stories. Cause that's one of the things with this podcast is, you know, sometimes the stories on here are the most important part because someone is trying to get into cybersecurity. You know, they're really having a hard time. They think they can't do it. And then they see someone with a similar background as them that encourages them to continue. So definitely stories, and especially the stories, you know, around what you're sharing experience with and trying to help others with is very important.
Yeah. I think one of the things that I've learned a lot on my own vulnerability journey is how many people, no matter how successful, feel that same thing, right? It's like, you know, you shared, we're part of a group of content creators, some of which are much more successful than you and I, and they still feel like that imposter syndrome, or like that, you know, oh, did the audience like that? Or like, you know, I didn't get the views that I thought I was going to get this week, or I put a lot of effort into that, whatever it is. And it's like, oh, wow. Yeah. It's like, it's just human stuff. It has nothing to do with like where I'm at versus where they're at or anything like that. I think about that in on your career path too. Like, you know, it sounds like your audience, is a lot of people looking to break into cybersecurity. And it's like, you know, something that is valuable. I wish I could tell myself back then is like, there is no, like, you're never going to turn the corner and find the room of adults. Like, you're the adults now. Mm-hmm. Like I, for a long time in my 20s, I was like waiting to like find the group of people that had it figured out and were like running things. And it's like, they don't exist. Like, every room that I've been in with the most successful people that I've been in, they all feel like they're faking it till they make it, or they're all figuring it out as they go. They're all just humans, you know? And they all go through the same crap that we do, and you know, like ups and downs of life, and I don't know, something really freeing about realizing that, like, oh, the executives at these big banks are like also, you know, some of them are going through relationship problems or substance abuse problems or mental health problems or whatever it is. It's like, oh yeah, okay. There's no difference between me at, you know, 24 and them at, you know, 57. they might have a nicer suit and a fatter 401k, but like under the hood, a lot of the same stuff is going on. So just early career people, just realize that, like, you're it. There's no room of people that like magically haven't figured out. You're here and you're deserving to be here. And just, yeah, do your thing.
Yeah. And back to that imposter syndrome that, you know, people run into that. So if anyone out there, you're sharing with people or speaking at conferences or doing other things, you know, realize that, you know things that some other people don't know, and you're going to be helpful, because I see people, you know, just starting out and they think they don't have anything to share, but you know, sometimes those stories of people that are just getting started, they're a few steps in ahead of someone else. And that, you know, that advice they can share can be very helpful to someone else.
I'll squash that all day. Everyone has something to share that is valuable for other people. When I was just starting before, like I said, early Twitter wasn't, didn't even look like it looks now. Right. And I started like an old blog at some point, and some of my most successful blogs were me learning the thing. There was like a purposely vulnerable web app thing to learn AppSec on. And it was actually kind of tricky to like get this purposely vulnerable app like stood up and running if you knew nothing. And I didn't know anything. I'd never been a sysadmin. I didn't know how to like fire up a server and like get all this crap installed, Apache running and all this kind of stuff at the time. And so I just wrote blogs about like, how do you get, it was called Damn Vulnerable Web App, DVWA, how to get DVWA running. And hey, by the way, here's like a few files that might save you some time in like getting this set up. Wildly popular. And I was like, oh, I'm trying to figure this out literally, but I'm just doing it publicly. And people were like, oh, this is great. Thanks for sharing this. Right. So literally your learning journey is interesting to somebody. Right. So yeah, everyone has something to share.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you mentioned, you know, because I see a lot of content creators that are in it for themselves, is to document what they're learning or to help them learn. And then you even think of Daniel Meisler, you know, his blog that he said a lot of his blog started out was just a place for him to keep his notes. Mm-hmm. And so now we're all fortunate that he shares that and other people are able to benefit from his research.
Yeah, I'm running a project right now called The Best of AI Security 2023. I don't consider myself an AI security expert by any means. I'm very interested in it. I would probably be a power user of some of the AI tools out there, but I wouldn't consider myself an expert in like the security research of it. But I used to run this project called the Top 10 Web Hacking Techniques back when I was at White Hat. And we would community collect all this web hacking research for the year. We'd have a community vote on it. And then we'd have an expert panel of judges like order the top 10. And then I and me and some colleagues would present this at conferences, and it was a cool project, but it was also really cool because I was forced to learn deep enough about all of these different techniques to be able to go present them on stage. And it would always get the best remark of all the talks I've ever given. I've given thousands of conference talks at this point. That talk was always the highest received because I would be talking about like Poodle and Shell Shock and Heartbleed and things that you read the headlines about, but maybe you didn't realize how it worked. And I would give you 5 minutes of like slides of like, hey, by the way, this is how Poodle works, right? Because I had to like intimately figure it out. Without fail, every time I got off stage, someone would be like, man, I read all about Shell Shock. I had no idea how that worked or whatever it was, right? So it was almost like selfish for me to like run that project because I got to learn about all, I didn't find a Poodle. Right. But here I was on stage telling everyone what Poodle was, along with 10 other votes, 9 other votes. And so I'm running it right now because that was so fun 10 years ago with the top 10 web hacking techniques that I used to do that in like 2014. I decided, hey, I'm going to do it with AI because I want to learn more about AI. So I had people submit a bunch of AI security research from last year. I think I got like almost 30 entries. We're doing a community vote right now, and I have an expert panel. I think you agreed to be on it. I know a bunch of people in Discord did. And then, so we're all going to look at it, and then I'm going to have to learn the top, you know, things out of AI security next year. And it's going to turn into a cool talk. I'm sure it will. Right. But am I the AI security expert? No, But I like, hey, here you are. We're all going to learn about it together. And I think, I mean, anyone could do anything like that. There's nothing special about me running this project. So,
yeah, very, very interesting project. Look forward to seeing that when you're completed.
It'll be a cool result. There's like really cool research in there, like GPU sniffing, like noisy neighbor stuff. Like, oh, you can like sniff the result of an LLM next on the GPU next to you. It's like, what the heck is that? Right. And a whole bunch of other really cool AI security projects. So
kind of thinking of, content creation and, you know, doing this to help your career. What advice would you give to anyone that's, you know, interested in content creation?
Just do it. Literally just do it. Stop thinking about it. Just suck for a long time. There's like an old quote. I think it's Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters who talked about American Idol and how it was just like the score. This is a weird tangent, but bear with me, that it was like the worst thing to happen to like music and musicians and young musicians was like these talent shows on TV, because it's like they get up there and they do their thing and it's like, oh, you're a little off pitch, and like people just pick them apart and like vote them to the next round and all this kind of stuff. He goes, I was like, that's not how any great music was ever made, right? It's like every great music, like musicians started just sucking for years in their basement or their garage with their friends or by themselves or whatever it was, right? They just had to like be garbage at it for so long until like something kind of good popped out, right? And even then, it's like the upper echelon of people that can like make something good pop out again and again and again, right? You know, even some of the greatest songwriters stop writing hits at some point, right? And so that's what I just like. You don't have to wait for permission to start anything. I didn't have to like ask anyone to start this AI security project and like look for someone's like affirmation that I was doing the right thing. Starting the newsletter, same thing. I just started, and it looks a whole lot different 50 episodes later than it did in the first 12, right? I'm sure you're learning how to do a podcast and how to produce a podcast. You didn't have to ask anyone permission to like start just like talking. You have valuable things to share. Literally everyone listening, you have something valuable to share if you feel called to do so. This isn't the path for everybody, right? It is a form of vulnerability doing this, because you're going to get critiques, right? Like I get weird comments on every single video I ever post. You gotta have thick skin for some of that and just not care. But yeah, there's like a term I like that I harp on a lot. It's like the Mona Lisa misconception. It's like, if you feel like if you can't produce the Mona Lisa, that you should not paint. And it's like, that's how I feel about content creation. It's like, just because I'm not John Hammond producing great YouTube videos every week doesn't mean I can't make a YouTube video, right? Just because I'm not Daniel Meisler writing a newsletter to 100,000 people doesn't mean I can't write a newsletter, right? So anyone who's looking to do it, just start a blog, just start something, start a newsletter, start a Twitter at the very least. Just like find your voice, find what's interesting, find what you connect with, make a community around you. It's changed my life for the better. It's opened so many doors. Almost every job that I've gotten has been through people that I've met on Twitter, which is a form of like micro content creation, right? So just put yourself in the room with the people that can help, you know, guide you in whatever direction you're trying to go. And then, yeah, just like, if you feel called to do so, definitely just start writing. Don't wait for permission and don't wait till you think it's perfect.
Yeah, very good. I like that. So we're getting down towards the end of the show. Is there anything you'd like to share before we close it up?
No, you gave me all the air on my newsletter and everything. So yeah, I'm at Matt J on Twitter. Please reach out. I'm annoyingly online on Twitter, so really easy to get a hold of there. No, this has been great. Philip, you have an awesome show. I listen to a lot of these episodes. I'm just, yeah, really glad to be here.
Yeah, thanks for taking time out of your schedule to be on the show. It's an honor and very appreciated.
Awesome. Thanks, Philip.
Thanks, everyone. We'll see you on the next episode.
Thank you for listening to The Philip Wiley Show. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. In the meantime, to learn more about Philip, go to thehackermaker.com and connect with him on LinkedIn and Twitter at Philip Wiley. Until next time.